Close your eyes and imagine what you'll look like 6 months from now. How's your hair look? The same? Now picture how your hair would look if you started using Hims. If you're picturing the same you as before, but with much thicker and fuller hair, you'd be correct. What can happen in 3 to 6 months? You could pick up a new hobby and get not that good at it yet. You could do about half of your New Year's resolution. You could learn a few songs on the piano or pick up bass guitar. Or you could start seeing thicker, fuller hair regrowth through Hims. Not bad for just 3 to 6 months. Men, if you're starting to notice your hair thinning when you look in the mirror, you're not alone. Life just gets busier and busier, and it can feel like there's not enough time in the day to do something about it. So, try Hims Hair Loss Solutions. You can avoid jumping through a bunch of frustrating hoops and get access to treatment without even leaving your home. Hims provides you with the convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary based on studies on topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're continuing with our expectations series today, looking at two Ravens, Andrew Voorhees and Adisa Isaac, both at an important point in their careers early on, and yet they have a path to playing time, and they need to take advantage of it with a combination of health and some good play. Joining me to talk about them is Matt Roth. Matt, how you doing?
Ken, excited to talk about these guys. I think they can prove this year that either they're a part of the solution and a part of the future, or, you know, just players that are passing through for a few years. So looking forward to some real development from both these players this year and a strong season.
Yeah, I think that covers it. Let's start with Andrew Voorhees on the offensive line here. He's actually entering his year two season. He seems like he's been with the Ravens now for a long time because he had that redshirt year in 2023 where he was NFI for the entire season. Great move by the Ravens, preserved some draft value. He turned 26 in January, so by the time this year is over, hopefully the Ravens make a playoff run and Andrew Voorhees will be a 27-year-old, which seems out of whack, but he did play 6 years at USC, as well as now 3 seasons with the Ravens. So he's not a young man anymore. Thoughts about that?
Yeah. So, you know, I think he's 26 years old, truly not 26 years young at this point. Played at USC for, you know, starting back in 2017, which, you know, feels like it was a couple decades ago at this point.
Marlon Humphrey was a rookie that year.
Yes. Yes. And so, you know, when you think about it, you say, okay, so he was in college for 6 years. When that happens, sometimes it's COVID that was messing up people's or allowing people to have more service time in college, but a lot of times that's injury related. He had knee cartilage surgery in 2018. He had an ankle injury in 2019. And, you know, as you mentioned, toward the ACL at the combine, which gave him an NFL redshirt year. But someone who has been around football for a long time at a real program in USC, maybe not top tier anymore like it used to be, and has been in the Ravens organization for a couple of years now. He really needs to take the next step in his career, or he really risks just kind of being one of those extra guys that bumbles around the league for a real short period of time and is out of it. So, you know, I think that his health is going to be the major story, because it's really hard to get better when you're not playing. You know, we saw with Daniel Falele last year, he started off rocky, right? He started off rough, but he was getting coached to the gills, right? You said some of the coaches really loved him and really helped improve his play. Voorhees is only going to get better if he plays, has film, learns from his mistakes, and keeps going forward.
Yeah, I completely agree, by the way. He's a guy who I don't know that I would project a ton of improvement, but since there hasn't been a lot of play in recent years, in 23 and 24 specifically, there probably is still some NFL technical improvement yet to come for Andrew Voorhees. He's only so much you can learn in the position group room when you're not actually out there learning that muscle memory and really going rep by rep and getting good coaching. He's a guy who brings all the strength you could want to an NFL field with the bench reps, in those terms, but his body type doesn't really turn that into functional strength all that well. He's a very tall, lean athlete, and that is not atypical for a guard. It's more typical for a tackle to be in that position. And it's meant that he doesn't have maybe the anchor you'd expect, or the other part of the problem that he has is he's not a particularly long guy at 32 inches and just a little bit more. So his strength would tell you he could probably be a right guard who could pivot that defensive tackle through the hole, open the front gate, as I like to say. But his length says otherwise. And Marshall Yanda may do with less length on the right side and was perfectly fine. But hey, we can't project Marshall Yanda's other tenacity and other components of his ability on everybody. Andrew Voorhees is going to have to find his way. And the opportunity is at left guard right now, I believe. I don't believe it's at right guard. I think the combination of Falele being pretty good at the end of last year and him being the incumbent with no other position apparent for him, meaning physically, I don't think there's another position on the offensive line that really makes sense for Falele. It's funny, but center might be the next most reasonable position for him after right guard, but he doesn't move well enough to be a left guard.
Yeah, no, totally agree. When you're looking up arm length for Andrew Voorhees, you'll see some estimates at 32 and a half, some at 32 and an eighth. So you're really starting to get into that, you know, danger zone, if not already in the danger zone, even at the guard level. To your point, you know, he's tall but short-armed. He's not very sand in the pants built, right? So he's got that upper end torque. But, you know, for those guards, you typically want them to have that, you know, you want them to be strong up top, but you want some of that weight and that power to be coming from the lower half of the body. I think that, like you said, I don't know if he has massive jumps worth of technical improvement to be had, seeing as he was in college for 6 years. He had the redshirt season under Joe D. He had last year under Warhop. But I'm hoping that just from a reps perspective that, you know, if you can get into, you know, weeks 10, 12, 13, kind of like Falele did, that you're going to be getting enough difference in opponent, different schemes, different sizes, and enough film on yourself where you can really start taking your technique to the next level. And if he can't do that, then I think that, you know, his career is probably going to be a short one.
Yeah, I would agree. If you look at the 2024 season, he started the first three games at left guard, so he won the job coming out of camp and the preseason. There were a lot of questions about that, by the way. People were constantly bringing up Ben Cleveland's name with respect to both Voorhees and Falele. But he did not end up starting. The problem was Andrew Voorhees got hurt in that week three game at Dallas. And then when he returned, which it didn't happen until week six or seven, I don't remember which, but anyway, I think it might have been the Denver game in week seven. McCary had taken a spot and he wasn't giving up. He kind of Wally Pipped is what we would call it. Lou Gehrig started his consecutive game streak by replacing Wally Pipp, and Wally Pipp never got his position back. So McCary played through all the rest of the season. He had some ups and downs too in terms of penalties, which is really Voorhees' fault. Voorhees' problem at the beginning of the year in those first three games was he had, more than anything else, he had some penalties that were reducing the quality of his play. McCary got his penalties under control in week 10. Voorhees didn't have the same opportunity to do so. The only other action of significance that he saw was in that week 18 game where McCary was supposed to play but showed up with a stomach virus, we think. Probably, and I was having the same thing at the time. This is why I think I'm projecting that he probably
likewise had the same
thing. A lot of people were having it in the Baltimore area, or having significant diarrhea issues and whatnot. And we think that's probably what happened to McCary, and Voorhees went in and filled in admirably, which is a very positive thing.
Yeah, for sure. My Christmas day was destroyed with whatever that abomination of a hurricane was. It helped me, you know, at least feel compassion for the players. But yeah, that was a whooping. Ken, my question for you is, do you think he has the mobility and the footwork to pull effectively in the run game from the left side? Do you think he can get to that spot? Maybe not there today, but do you think he has the traits to get there?
So that is the real question. And he is, I think he's probably the Ravens' best option among the players they currently have, with one possible exception being Dellinger, who's fairly far down the totem pole right now, just starting his rookie year. Voorhees, it's a real obstacle. Sorry, not Voorhees, Falele. It's a real obstacle to his quality of play, is that his footwork is so bad. And he does a lot of things very well. Daniel Falele is one hell of a pass blocker, but the two things he really lacks are any kind of foot speed, which a lot of zone schemes, it makes him far less effective. Pulling, it really almost means you can't use him in that capacity. And in terms of getting to level two, he also lacks decisiveness, which we'll talk about that in the Falele episode. I would say Voorhees is more like an unknown in that area, which is a lot better than what Falele is. Cleveland had some issues with lumbering as well. He's a much bigger man. He's probably not the great athlete that you can have at left guard. But the Ravens have made very average athletes like James Hurst and Bradley Bozeman. Bradley Bozeman was a guy who came out of school and was broadly criticized for not being athletic enough to play center. And the Ravens put him in left guard and had him pulling over 20 times in some of his games here in Baltimore.
Oh, yeah.
So it can work out. And I think for Voorhees, it's a matter of teaching him the skills. I don't think he's so far below par as an athlete that he can't do it. He's oddly shaped for a guard, but I think he could probably handle that part of the job.
Yeah, I definitely get worried with the. I mean, my assumption is he's at least first in line to be the left guard. Mm-hmm. I do get a little bit worried where Stanley's your prototypical left tackle build, right? He's not heavy, in any way, shape, or form. He's got the quickness and mobility that you need there. At the center position, Linderbaum is very quick, but also short-armed and also just not that heavy. And so with Voorhees, you almost have a left side of the line that seems to be underweight. I don't know if that's a thing necessarily, but it seems like, if you're going to get mobility out of the left side of the line, that's fair, right? If you're going to be smaller on that left side, that would work. But I do think you become a little bit susceptible to certain teams and the way they can line up different players against you, where you're lacking, you could be lacking 60 or 75 pounds of beef on that left side across.
Yeah, it's not a unreasonable concern at all. Stanley's always been a guy who kind of gave ground in order to maintain his mirror. That certainly could be a problem. And I really believe in having a mix of body types to handle pass blocking responsibilities and run blocking responsibilities for that matter. But the pass blocking responsibilities are the really important ones. And when you talk about that, you don't want to have short arm guys at a couple of consecutive spots who are going to make you vulnerable to multiple types of stunts. You're usually going to be vulnerable to something because somebody's going to have short arms, whether it's a left guard or center or even right guard. And you're going to be vulnerable to some face crossing maneuvers, but the more length you sacrifice there on the inside, the more likely it is you're going to face multiple elements of trickery that can cause problems. And that left A gap will be a target, you know, given who these guys are for stunt games. So we'll see how that works out. Obviously, the point is right on spot though, that these guys are represent a challenge for the offensive coordinator to figure out how to use them together. And if you wanted to come up with the best possible reason for Cleveland to take the role away from Voorhees, it would be mixed body types. If you want to come up with a reason why he shouldn't have it, it's they need his versatility as a trump card to play when they need it at some other position.
Do you think Cleveland has a shot at winning something like the left guard position in camp this year? Or do you think he's more of a center, right guard, left guard backup, almost like McCary, right, in terms of versatility, even right tackle if you need it in a pinch? Not that you'd love it there, but do you think the versatility maybe holds him out of the starting lineup like it did potentially for McCary? Or do you think he could actually show up to camp, the team is impressed, and he hops over Voorhees and his 2 years of service after this year as opposed to Cleveland zero?
Yeah, so one of the issues with Cleveland is he's only signed for 1 year. So the club is always going to be incented to put a rookie or a second-year player like Voorhees in that left guard position if they're equivalent, all right? And they may not say they're incented, and their depth chart may always put these guys ahead of them, but the truth of the matter is they really want to see a rookie who has 4 years of – or three or four years in three in Voorhees' case left on under team control. With Cleveland, I mean, it wouldn't be the worst thing if he came in and had a Pro Bowl season at left guard. It'd be great for the Ravens in a lot of ways. So they get the high value season at a very low cost. They'd get a compensatory pick, but they wouldn't have a chance to re-sign the guy, and their 2026 problems would be recurrent. They'd be back again next year at this time. One of the big things they have to determine is bigger than the left guard problem. And that is, do they have a replacement for Tyler Linderbaum if he walks? And the only way they're going to get that is if Garrett Dellinger has playing time and they develop some trust in what he can do. I think he's the hope. I know Voorhees has taken a few snaps at center, if I recall correctly, during camp. They're having a lot of people do it for emergency purposes. I don't believe Nick Samak is a great bet to be around and be the backup center, and particularly in 26. I think that Dellinger is the guy. And if they want to try and see who he is this year, then they're going to be incented to play him at left guard and not Voorhees. So, you know, we could see rotational play. That's certainly possible. And it would, in a lot of ways, this year it might make more sense than it ever did before. And in particular, I think the anxiety level is going to ratchet up as we get closer to the season with Linderbaum unsigned, because that'll mean that there's some gap that they can't solve. They want to re-sign him, but it may be that Linderbaum and his people think he's worth $19 million a year and resetting the market, and the Ravens think he's worth $15.5 or $16 million and being proportional to where Creed Humphrey is paid. So tough. It's a tough situation.
Definitely. Definitely. I still struggle with paying the center. I mean, unless it's Creed Humphrey or Nick Mangold, 16, 17 million. I mean, that's a really hard pill to swallow. I feel like Linderbaum just struggles against the Dexter Lawrence types. And, you know, maybe not even the people with as big of a name and reputation as Dexter Lawrence, but maybe just the similar size, which is well covered on your podcast for sure.
Okay. So We haven't really talked about Emory Jones too much either. Now, Emory Jones, I don't know where he ends up for the Ravens. Presumably he could end up at tackle, but I think that they could also play him at guard. The issue with Jones is that he is probably not going to even start camp, would be my guess. He had some sort of a labrum issue, may have had a minor surgery on it. I don't remember exactly what the issue was, or maybe doing some rehab for it. But either way, he's not going to do any football work until at least camp. Now, when I hear that, and that's a safety net, I usually think he's going to miss a substantial portion of camp. And Harbaugh even said, you know, we're not going to rush it, you know, that kind of thing. Last year, remember, Tyler Linderbaum was basically out for most of camp when they weren't going to rush it. And he did come back and start the regular season. Everything was fine. It didn't, you know, I don't think he took a step back in play because of the injury in terms of what happened. You could make the case for that, but I don't think that's really the case. With Emory Jones, that means critical development time. He's getting his first time working with Warhop. And if, you know, he were getting the attention Carson Vincent was getting, I think it would have a real developmentally positive impact on him.
Yeah, I'm hoping that he's a key piece of the puzzle. Anytime you see injuries, I mean, like we're about to talk about Adisa Isaac. He had the hamstring injuries in camp last year and in the preseason. And it really feels like that puts a damper on the entire season. I think that the coaches ultimately don't get the trust in a player that they don't know, right? This is the first time they're getting a look at the player. And when the player doesn't play, they just cannot develop. You know, every day in camp, you're practicing for a couple hours. When you miss that, it's really hard to get in there. So I'm hoping Emory Jones can heal quickly, doesn't lose too much strength in the healing process, right? Because you're not lifting weights. You're not getting stronger, right? So, you know, I hope he doesn't come out there, because if you come out there and your strength is overall weak, it's really hard to plug in at guard as a rookie. You know what I mean? There's being a weak rookie guard, it just sounds like a recipe to get, you know, dominated by some of the tough defensive lines that we play.
Or bench.
Yes. Yeah. Quickly. Quickly. And we're put on the injury list for the rest of the year, right? Where they're just like, yep, you're not ready. You know, almost kind of like Carson Vincent.
Yeah. So they may make use of that at some point as roster spots become in greater need. Let's go with Voorhees and take us through what is a good season from your perspective.
Yeah, and I'll jump into the good season real quick, Ken. But I think that if Emory Jones can't get healthy and strong enough, and if they're not seeing it from Voorhees, I think they could pick up a veteran guard. So, you know, it could definitely happen. Hope that the young guys can certainly, you know, take it going forward. But, you know, again, a veteran guard might be in play if Emory Jones can't take that next step, and if Voorhees doesn't show it. But here's my good season for Voorhees. So, Ken, I'm going to go through my bullet points for Voorhees. So a good season is he stays healthy. He starts roughly 14 or 15 games at left guard or another position on the offensive line if needed. I think it would most likely be left guard. Looks competent in training camp. Plays to a slightly below average level across the year. He doesn't get destroyed by penalties. He's able to utilize his mobility and some of his past experience of playing offensive line in the run game to at least look competent there. Holds on for dear life in bull rush situations and isn't a complete liability. Although, you know, when you're grading it with Maureen, you're maybe, you know, closing your eyes a little bit when you're seeing it. Receives help from Linderbaum and forms a decent tandem with him, and maybe they're combining on blocks more frequently because he needs the most help, and ultimately doesn't let his lack of weight and arm length form a bad combination with Linderbaum where he gets benched during the season, because Linderbaum's not going to get benched, right? He would have of the combo. So hopefully that combination can be strong enough where he can maintain a starting job for the season.
That's very well done. That's very well done. That's pithy and extremely a reasonable set of goals across the board. Mine is similar. I'll do the same thing. Healthy preseason helps him secure the starting left guard role. I think without it, he's at risk again. Ravens consider others for the role, but circumstances Jones's injury and the desired versatility from Cleveland conspire with camp preseason results to give him the job. Plays 15 plus games, turns in a near full season at or near a league average level. Provides acceptable left guard mobility to the position, which the Ravens otherwise lack on the roster. Combines with Linderbaum as a valuable combination block tandem. Processes quickly from inside out to provide help blocks to Ronnie Stanley. That's a pass blocking want to have that I think is actually kind of important. And he remains the most likely incumbent for left guard in 2026. The Ravens are comfortable enough with his play and the backups to avoid a substantive expenditure in either draft capital or cap space.
Sounds good.
All right. How about your great season?
All right, great season. The first bullet is the same as the good season, stays healthy. There's no such thing as a great season here without the health. Locks up a starting role with no doubt in training camp, 14 or 15 plus games. Comes in looking bigger and stronger on the lower half. Maybe not a Superman or a Hulk size change, but comes in looking like, wow, he really put in some work. Maybe he was able to add something like 12 or 14 pounds to his frame and just looks a bit more competent and looks like he was really trying to put on some extra weight, gets more movement in the run game and, you know, pulls in a way that the Ravens ask left guards to pull effectively, has good footwork on pulls. Bull rushes are no longer too much of an issue unless it's an elite player with the additional strength. And overall, the Ravens are confident and satisfied with the position for the next 2 years for a very affordable value, which Voorhees provides.
All right. All right. That's outstanding. My great season is never in doubt about the starting left guard role to healthy for at least 16 games. Plays above the league average. Learns the Ravens way on pulling and excels in that role. The Ravens way is, I'm not an athlete, but you can help me pull anyway. You can help me learn the dance steps to pull effectively. Blocking in space is better than expected when climbing. There's a whole lot of that going on across the Ravens line and across the league in general. Is players get very lungy in level two, and some of them, and Voorhees is probably a C in this category, but Falele is absolutely an A, would do better just to impose their size and out-position a player that's coming from level three, because nobody wants to make contact with that guy. And Voorhees could do some of that as well. Usually you're better off than lunging to just position yourself such that people know not to make contact with you. Handles blitz and stun handoffs by recognition and depth management, at least at a league average level. I think that's the biggest thing about his pass blocking. You mentioned the anchor. That is absolutely critical in terms of one-on-one. But I think the Ravens are potentially in a position where they could get beat a lot in that A gap if he can't handle blitz and stun handoffs appropriately. Mm-hmm. Limits penalties by understanding when he needs to let go despite tremendous advantages gained from grip strength. So that's one place where his strength should be apparent, but can't use it if it's going to cause holding penalties. Ravens enter the offseason projecting him as a starter for 26 and 27 and excited about the possibility of additional growth.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And you know, okay, so he has big hands. He's got good grip strength. Is he working on the positioning of...
Close your eyes and imagine what you'll look like 6 months from now. How's your hair look? The same? Now picture how your hair would look if you started using Hims. If you're picturing the same you as before, but with much thicker and fuller hair, you'd be correct. What can happen in 3 to 6 months? You could pick up a new hobby and get... not that good at it yet. You could do about half of your New Year's resolution. You could learn a few songs on the piano or pick up bass guitar. Or you could start seeing thicker, fuller hair regrowth through Hims. Not bad for just 3 to 6 months. Men, if you're starting to notice your hair thinning when you look in the mirror, you're not alone. Life just gets busier and busier, and it can feel like there's not enough time in the day to do something about it. So try Hims Hair Loss Solutions. You can avoid jumping through a bunch of frustrating hoops and get access to treatment without even leaving your home. Hims provides you with the convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. answer a few questions, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary based on studies on topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
His hands on the opponent's breastplate, right? Where is he getting that hand, right? What is he doing? Is he making sure that he's using his hands in a way that the refs aren't watching, right? If your hands are on the outside pads and you're grabbing for dear life, that's not going to be very good when Lamar moves in the pocket. The defender moves after Lamar and you're grabbing him, right? Do you have him on the inside? Are you using that leverage appropriately? And with his arm length, that's not as easy to do. But you know, like you said, there's been plenty of offensive linemen with shorter arms who have done a really good job. It's just, if you look at all the offensive linemen in the world, the ones with the short arms are overwhelmingly so not successful, right? So if he's going to be successful, hand placement, avoiding penalties, and improving that area is certainly going to be key for him.
There you go. All right, let's move on and talk about Adisa Isaac, who will be 24 in October. Seemed like a great value in round three last year, but unfortunately injuries got to him during camp. He played, I think, pretty well against the Atlanta Falcons in the second game, but he missed the first and the third game, kind of an unusual combination, and didn't end up playing very much during the entire regular season. He had a lot of healthy scratches, and he only played 32 defensive snaps.
Yeah, so Adisa Isaac is turning 24 in October, so he's a young player. He's not turning 27 like Voorhees. He's out of Penn State. He missed the 2021 season because of an Achilles injury. So, it has a history of missing time with injuries, which is a little scary, especially from a developmental perspective. He did show pretty good progression when he was at Penn State. So his first two seasons, 2019 and 2020, he had a 1.5 sacks. I mean, he had a couple tackles, increased to 4 sacks in 22, 7.5 sacks in 23, with his tackles increasing. He's about 6'4", 250, 255 pounds, give or take. And ultimately, he needs to find a place in what is a little bit of a crowded outside linebacker room in Baltimore. Oop, Ken, I think you're muted.
We should go through that, the crowding of that room right away, though. The Tavius Robinson has been playing in base packages primarily as a run defender. In fact, last year, because of the desire to keep their very limited pass rushers, which at the end of the year was Van Noy and Owe only, they used Robinson and Harrison at outside linebacker on most early downs in a base package that they were running. This year, they're in a better position. They've got Van Noy, Owe, and Green. Hopefully, we'll all be healthy. They've got Adisa Isaac. They've got David Ajabo if he's going to make the team, but we'll talk about that in a minute. But I would expect Van Noy, Owe, and Green will get the lion's share of the pass rush snaps. And the Ravens have done well with 3 to make 2. It can work out that you need a different 3 to make 2 if one guy is hurt. So that certainly could come up, and it could be an opportunity for a player like Isaac. But I think those guys will get the lion's share. I think if they play rush nickel, it'll be all three of them. If they play a you know, kind of the committed two outside linebacker nickel they've been using when they have an inside linebacker and two defensive linemen, then it'll be more likely that two of the three of Vannoy, Owe, and Green are on the field with less opportunity for the other outside linebackers to be there. It's very possible because of the loss of Michael Pierce and the lack of anything much beyond the outstanding top pairing on the interior, that they will be resistant to playing rush nickel the way they have been the last year or two. So I think we'll see more three outside linebacker packages. We could even see Race Car, depending on, you know, what Matabike's availability is. That could be something they fall back on. Aeneas Peebles has to find playing time, for example. There has to be a way to get him in there. So the Ravens have some interesting depth issues to decide. It seems that like this happens every year about this time, is we kind of overstate the Ravens' depth because injuries will dictate a completely different path when the season plays out.
Yeah, it certainly will. For all of these sports, the name of the game is injuries. I think every time I've seen a sports team that I follow think that they've got amazing depth in one area, all it takes is a few weeks and, you know, acts of God, and you're wondering how can we supplement this area. I definitely think the defensive line, including the outside linebackers or the edge players, is one of the most interesting areas of focus for this year. They're obviously trying to get younger. They've lost some of the vets like Pierce, like Urban, and they're going to be losing some players in the future like Vannoy and Owe potentially. It would be really nice to come out of this year saying, wow, Adisa Isaac looks like a real piece. Maybe he's a situational pass rusher. Maybe he's improved in the run game. Maybe he's done something just to improve some aspect of his game where they want him active. They want him on the field. He's playing some special teams along with it and is overall providing a pretty good contribution for the next few years.
Yeah. So let's talk about the biggest question in this outside linebacker group, because I don't think there's room for six. I think really they'll carry five, and even with five, they may have one inactive from the group on some games. So nobody's guaranteed roster time here or activations anyway. But if the depth holds up on the team, if nobody's hurt to start the regular season, which is always a possibility, then it seems like Ajabo is playing against Isaac for the last spot on this roster, the last spot of the outside linebacker group. Let's put it that way. And I think Isaac has a very big advantage. Two very big advantages. One is tenure, because Ajabo's entering year four, and the Ravens own none of his future after this year. So that's a major situation. But also the fact that Isaac plays special teams and Ajabo really doesn't. Ajabo plays on I think the kick. I believe the field goal kick team, maybe the field goal block team. It's one or the other, but he doesn't play much in terms of special teams. So he's a guy who basically is sitting out during special teams drills, where Isaac is a very athletic linebacker, and the Ravens have lost some of the size on their special teams unit that the linebackers typically give you. So that's an area where he would do very well to take as many responsibilities as he possibly can, try and become really good at covering kicks. And I think then he becomes a prohibitive favorite to win that last position over Ajabo.
Yeah. The Ajabo situation is very strange, or just sad and unfortunate. You know, I think maybe that injury really cost him, you know, could potentially have cost him his career. Not everyone comes back from injuries like Adrian Peterson did. You know, I think that we've gotten a little spoiled with seeing people come back from knee injuries, Achilles injuries, pitchers coming back from Tommy John, you know, but just because it is possible doesn't mean that every player is going to do that. And I worry that Ajabo has lost the juice that really made him special. I don't think he was ever a super powerful player. And, you know, I think, you know, for some players, just losing a little bit of that burst, or, you know, losing a mile or two per hour off your fastball really takes you from someone who's special to someone who's mediocre. And it can happen really quickly. So, you know, for Ajabo, does he come in with a little bit more burst now that he's several years removed from that injury? Does he come in with a new tool in the toolkit, or does he even have many tools? I just haven't seen any plus tools from out of, from him really. So, you know, now to be fair, I haven't seen many plus tools out of Isaac, but to your point, Ken, year four, right? Okay. You can trade him for a conditional seventh or something like that versus Isaac going into year two. If he can at least contribute on a couple different special teams units, that's going to keep him active on the roster, and that health permitting, you could in theory keep Ajabo off the roster.
Yeah.
Do you put any stock in Malik Ham, Ken? I know that.
I like him as a Sam linebacker. I think he's probably a good chance to make the Ravens practice squad, and he could be an elevation on some game days if that came up. But Malik Ham for several years now has been frustrated, obviously, with injuries. And I think he's probably a year three player now, even though he hasn't. And I'd have to look at the roster.
I think he is.
But anyway, the Ravens have lost a lot of their opportunity with him, which is very unfortunate because he showed up very well in the preseason as a guy who could drop the cover, and the Ravens do very much need that. They've left away on the rush side. He started there with Bowser when the Ravens had, you know, high quality outside linebacker who could drop on, you know, to play Sam. But he stayed there with Van Noy, who's now 35 years old and is still the incumbent Sam linebacker. He has tons of experience doing it, but he lacks some of the athleticism, obviously, that he once had at the position. And if you're talking about who else could do it, I mean, there are two guys. It's Isaac and Owe. And for whatever reason, Owe, who's a, you know, is the best athlete in the entire group that they have, has not been a guy who was put into that role. And maybe it's interesting, maybe with Mike Green they'll have an opportunity to do more of that. I mean, they might want Mike Green more on that rush side and you know, fanning out the defense, doing whatever they'd like to create additional opportunity for him. And it may be a year where Owe gets some snaps as a Sam, but that's been a little disappointing, honestly, that Owe's never been able to take on that role.
Yeah, I agree. I think that this preseason is really going to be in the actual games are going to be very important for Isaac, for Ajabo, for, you know, those two specifically, but even for Malik Ham, et cetera. But I think the reason why it's going to be important is because Mike Green is going to get some snaps, right? He's never played in the NFL before. The coaches are going to want him out there learning the communications and everything. So he's going to be out there. His raw talent is off the charts high. So when he's out there, and then you're going to see, oh, you know, you're going to see a Ajabo come in after him, or you're going to see Adisa Isaac come in after him. What are you seeing, right? Are you seeing guys going into their second year like Isaac or their fourth year like Ajabo? And if they just can't even hold a candle to, not that they're ever going to have his athletic profile, but if they don't have any pass rush moves, right? If they're just getting just stuck in the mud by third and fourth string offensive linemen, I think it's going to be pretty damning for either of those two. Whereas if one of them is jumping off the screen a little bit, maybe not that, oh, hey, this guy's going to be the best player, but hey, I'm playing against the second or third string and I'm truly more elite than that group, meaning I could definitely hang on the bottom of the roster in that fourth and fifth spot. I just think that that's going to be really important. And, you know, the Ravens don't always have someone of Mike Green's stature who's going to be playing in the preseason, right? This is probably going to be this, if all things hold and we're lucky, this is probably the last set of preseason games that Mike Green plays in, right? He
goes off
and, you know what I mean? We don't see him in the preseason again. He's in bubble wrap from here on out, but he's going to get time because he's got to learn, you know? So it's really going to be a benchmark for some of these other players like Isaac and Ajabo to say, hey, okay, you might not have the athletic profile, but what moves have you been working on with Chuck Smith in the offseason, right? What's your plan? What are you doing? They should look more competent than Green in some areas because Green hasn't been at a place where he's gotten elite coaching at all, right? So Isaac and Ajabo have been getting Chuck Smith coaching, which is far better than the Marshall or the UVA coaching that Mike Green's got. So they need to be able to differentiate themselves in some sort of technical way that lets the Ravens know, hey, we can carry this person on the roster. We're going to rotate them in.
Yeah, that's very good points there. Extremely well said. It's he's Matt Ruff, and the dog, that's the dog roughing though. Anyway, health, very important. It's really important in a much broader set of positions. I don't always have this many interesting things happening, or the Ravens don't in the preseason, or this many things I want to go to camp and watch. But I tell you, I really want to see what Kane and Braid can do on the back end. That's a big one for camp. It's a big one for preseason. And if the Ravens have a player who can take some time on the back end, Kane and Braid, what they do will be a big deal. I want to see Jason Jones and see if he can play nose tackle and if John Jenkins is even needed, because if they don't need John Jenkins, they should be cutting him and getting 4 years of Jason Jones and not risking losing that. So there are still some good things in camp. We could have had true battle royale between him and Hutmaker if the Ravens had signed him for that nose tackle role. That would have been like Kelly Gregg and Dwayne Missouri in terms of the drama potentially from a in camp fight. And then we're going to see other things. We're going to see some veteran safety come in, and Eddie Jackson probably looked, we probably had, we're more optimistic about Eddie Jackson at the end of camp. He came in, I think, on his first or second day, an interception. So, you know, you set the tone, and then you kind of start making excuses for the guy because you're not supposed to be playing the football or, you know, making contact. And so you don't want him doing that. Same thing is done for JAD every year, by the way. It's like, oh, it's okay because he's not supposed to be making contact with that receiver. It really wasn't okay because the root cause was he wasn't finding the football. Anyway, getting back to Isaac. Yeah, I want to see good things from him, obviously, in camp. And I think the biggest thing that will be apparent is what units he's playing on in special teams. If he's playing on three or four special teams units, particularly if he's playing on four, then I think that's a pretty clear indicator he'll make the team. If he's if Ajabo, assuming Ajabo is not, you know, it doesn't mean Ajabo can't have a job at some point, but it does mean he has to basically depend on something else occurring, circumstances conspiring somehow to keep him around. And that's more difficult. He might have to go on IR himself for 4 weeks. If he's got some minor injury, he might have to wait for his opportunity until someone gets hurt, which is tough. But he just honestly just has not done enough in his time that he's been on the field for us to have anything but a lower opinion of both floor and ceiling than when he came into this league.
Yeah, I agree. Big off season for him. I do think that, you know, I've gone through several injuries, several surgeries, similar to what Ajabo's gone through, and it takes a long time to recover. The leg injuries take a very long time to recover from. But this is the NFL, right? It's not someone like us who's just getting older, right? We can take as much time as we want to get ready. Ajabo has a clock that is very finite in your time in the NFL. And he really needs to turn it. He really needs to show that he's got something back, that there's some redeeming characteristic. I don't watch him, or I don't watch football as closely as you do, Ken. Maybe one day in life I'll be able to get there, but I have not seen the redeeming quality of Ajabo. And Adisa Isaac seems like someone who just needs a lot of coaching, needs to work on his body a little bit, but you know, this is really it for Ajabo. He's got to show something. And on the Isaac front, I'm hoping that he can take the off season of wisdom and really start applying it in camp. And, you know, when he's playing against those third and fourth stringers, you know, they should be able to show something. They really should.
I'm with you. You know, the role for Isaac is a little bit unclear. There is one clear element, that's play special teams as much as you can. But, you know, if you look at what the Ravens need, it's really more of an early down run defender who can also rush the passer and still provide some juice. That's more or less what they need. They'd like to not use Van Noy in that role on the Sam side. And I think that Isaac would be an ideal candidate for doing that. And then if you're talking about what Isaac's best fit might be, it probably is as a situational pass rusher. Right. And that's a tough, you know, lack of connection there to have, is that the need does not exactly match who you are. But how he can make up for that is by being a good special teams player who has a lot of value.
For sure.
All right. All right. What's a good season for Adisa Isaac?
All right. So a good season for Adisa Isaac starts with no nagging injuries in training camp. You can't be missing camp. You can't miss the time with the coaches. You can't be in the trainer's room for little hamstring tweaks and things of that sort. If he's going to get the technical prowess, no nagging injuries. He beats out Ajabo for that last spot, that fifth spot on the roster, plays on special teams. He gets, I'm ballparking it, maybe 100 snaps on defense, give or take, and ultimately shows the Ravens that his two more years that they have under contract is going to come at good value to them and that he's a good part of the future.
All right. That's a very reasonable goal there. I have active for at least 12 games, which means he beats out Ajabo for a roster spot or at least activations as OLB5. So if they carried six and activated five, which I guess is a possibility, the roster spot's under a lot of constraints for other reasons. Most notably from the offense for Carson Vinson, big loss of special team snaps in terms of the linebackers. They need dual threat players, players who can play defense or offense and also play special teams. And I think Ajabo, that's his path to get there. I want him to get back on the developmental curve as a pass rusher with notable improvement in 24. I'm not going to try and define it specifically because he didn't play at all. Really this first year played, what was it, 32 snaps. Got to get with Chuck Smith, got to improve your game in some ways and get back to a point where it looks like he's going to provide something as a pass rusher. That's what he's drafted for. And if we, by the end of 2025, if we don't think 2026 and 27 could be good growth years for him, that's a bad thing. Plays a significant role on special teams and flashes pressure. I don't have any requirement for a gaudy sack total, but I want to see a few flash plays, a handful, maybe two, three, four, where he beats his guy in a way that says, oh, that looks good. Let's see if you can do that again. I'm not, your snap total, 75 to 200, perfect range. That'd be fine. Ajabo played something like 290, I think, last year. So it's not like he didn't get some playing time, but the Ravens have a more crowded group this year. So I think, that range of maybe 75 to 200, 75 to 150, maybe even is very reasonable. What does a great season look like?
All right. So again, it starts with health for him, 14 plus games on the active roster. Has some redeeming quality that allows him to get increasing snaps through the year, whether it's a certain move, whether they like him in a certain package, could be the race car package, right? There's something about him that they think has a place on this defense, and they value him being active on game day, not only for his special teams contributions, but for whatever that piece is on defense that he can use to provide value. Number two, is a real part of the team's future plans, right? We have him for 2 years after this, and you're utilizing what you've seen from this year, or EDC is, to really help project going forward for the Ravens where he would be, and ultimately maybe allows them to not sign an aging veteran pass rusher and save some cap dollars, or maybe save a draft pick in a certain area. And then number three, makes the team feel much better should Owe and or Van Noy both depart.
Okay. Yeah, that's very good. I'd say snap count of 25% plus. And for him to do that, he's going to have to take a significant defined role, which I think you're kind of alluding to is what you went on. He's either going to have to be a pass rusher, or he's going to have to be a run defender, or he's going to have to be in a specific package. And he's probably going to have to play well at some specialized thing. Mm-hmm. So that I don't think he'd get to as high as 25% of snaps, given who the competition is, if he didn't really play well to do it. I'll just say in a general sense, he creates pressure in obvious pass rush situations with quickness and additional work with Chuck Smith, and he's ready to take a bigger pass rush role if injury strikes at outside linebacker. And that, honestly, that's usually the path to opportunity, is injury in the NFL. So it could be the 25% plus is an out of necessity trial by fire because somebody got hurt, where he has to take on a bigger role. That wouldn't be good for the team. It could potentially be very good for Adisa Isaac to get that sort of opportunity.
Yeah, I think he could also see an increase in snaps if the Ravens can play like they should against the lower competition, there, if you're beating some of these teams like the Ravens should, there's no reason why Van Noy should be seeing a fourth quarter, right? Like, that needs to all go to developmental players. I feel like they did that pretty well a couple of years ago. I don't know if they did that as well last year, especially in the beginning of the year. So, you know, if the Ravens can get ahead, let's get some snaps for these young guys. Let's get some of the older guys off their feet and some of the, you know, the elite players, get them off their feet and allow the young guys to get film that they can study.
Okay. All right. I think that's a good way to put it. Matt, always great talking football with you. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
All right. You can find me at Kid Rock on Twitter.
Okay. 20 Kid Rock, right?
Yes.
Okay. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, this is the season to do it before camp. There is an opportunity to do some, and I've allocated some individual blocks, about one show per week that could be done on a film study short. Hit me up with whatever passion project you have. And if you're interested in looking at a work to present visualizations on Ravens data, I am looking for somebody to help me with that. As always, if you have any other interest in a sabermetrics, football metrics project, I'm happy to help you with that. No need for authorship or anything. I just want you to come on the show and kind of explain what your theory is. Matt, thanks again for joining me.
All right, Ken, take care.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. TNCs apply.